Using my new powers, right?
We were looking for the penthouse, no success.
That's right. I haven't found it yet, Commissioner, but we'll let you know.
I'm gonna have to save this note for the archives. Welcome, private jet, penthouse.
Yeah. All right, next up, Carla, we're back in session. Next up is item 22. Please time, sir.
Report on recent work from the city auditor, police overtime, Portland building construction contract, tax accountability, and various follow-up reports.
Good afternoon, Madam Auditor. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Wait, I'll get my microphone, sorry. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Before we begin, I'd like to extend our condolences to Commissioner Fish's family and staff and acknowledge just how much we will miss him and his enthusiasm for transparency and accountability in city government. It was my honor to serve with him. We are back before you today to share three recently completed audits on police overtime, the Portland building renovation contract, and accountability commitments to voters. Before we get started on those, though, I want to bring your attention to a new process we started last year publishing follow-up reports. Improving programs and operations, using taxpayer money efficiently, and ensuring equitable outcomes from city service delivery are the goals of our audit work. To achieve them, bureaus must act on our audit recommendations. Beginning last January, my office began using brief reports documenting bureau progress to implement recommendations. Our prior practice was to track progress and report it as an auditor's office performance measure, but that fell short of giving credit publicly when bureaus took action and giving them a nudge when they haven't. We issued three follow-up reports in 2019. By design, the reports are brief and use a green, yellow, red graphic to indicate implementation status. In future presentations to council, we will include these reports in more detail as time permits. We also look forward to the day we publish our first follow-up audit with all green icons. Now to the new audit reports. With me today from my audit team are Elizabeth Pape, Tenzin Gonta, and Jenny Scott. Elizabeth will start with police overtime.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Pape, and I'm going to talk about the results and recommendations of our latest audit on police overtime. We found that police were working a lot of overtime, nearly 250,000 hours in 2018. That's equivalent to more than 115 employees. These overtime hours affected officers out on patrol, interacting with the public. The most hours worked by any single patrol officer in 1 week was 97 hours. Patrol officers worked more than 20 hours of overtime in 1 week, 1,100 times in 2018. Long work hours like these cause fatigue. Researchers have documented that officers who work excessive overtime were more prone to accidents and injuries on duty, had a higher incidence of burnout, which can lead to early retirement, used sick time more often, and fell asleep more on duty. We found that there was no mechanism to identify officers who may have been putting in excessive overtime and in danger of being overfatigued. 10% of patrol officers consistently worked more than 20 hours of overtime in a week, and one worked more than 20 hours of overtime more than he didn't, 27 weeks in 2018. Sergeants had no way to identify these outliers. Some cities place limits on the total number of hours, including overtime, officers can work in order to prevent fatigue and abuse. Seattle has a limit of 90 hours. San Francisco has a limit of 60 hours. Denver has a limit of 64 hours. In contrast to peer cities, Portland did not have limits on the amount of overtime officers could work. Bureau staff at all levels said there was no sense in looking for ways to limit overtime because of the existing personnel shortage, and the numbers the Bureau reports to the City Council reinforce this message. We found that reasoning to be based on faulty assumptions that overtime data were reliable and management decisions about when to use it were sound. The numbers in the personnel shortage category that's reported to council include instances when sergeants asked officers to work patrol on overtime above shift minimums when they wanted extra people. At least some portion of overtime attributed to personnel shortage was instead the result of a computer problem. We documented instances in which the system recorded overtime as related to personnel shortage when shifts were staffed above minimum. Missing or inaccurate data made it impossible for the Bureau to verify whether personnel shortage overtime was only used in cases where shifts fell below minimums and which sergeants were responsible. We also reviewed the Bureau's program to allow officers to work off-duty overtime for private employers. Officers worked 19,000 hours of overtime for 89 private employers in 2018. But there are risks to providing this service to private employers. Secondary employment can delegitimize the police force. Staff said that sometimes business owners didn't want police to arrest people even when they committed crimes. They said owners mostly wanted police for visibility and that it was problematic when public observed a uniformed officer or sergeant who didn't arrest someone committing a crime. Secondary employment can create an appearance of political favoritism. The Bureau approved a contract for security at an event hosted by the Southern Poverty Law Center, even though the contract explicitly stated that it was a private event intended for donors. In contrast, the Bureau denied a contract related to an event hosted by the Oregon Liberty Alliance, determining that it was political and largely for private security services. Secondary employment can result in biased policing. Commanders said they struggled at times to reconcile requests for police services with the Bureau's approach to racial equity. Staff seemed to appreciate the danger that private employers might request police to target people of color and had considered this risk in some of the requests that were denied. But there was no way to document this consideration because the criteria for denying contracts did not include concerns about racial bias. Commanders didn't discuss this concern for contracts they had approved. Secondary employment can burden city finances. The amount the city billed for secondary employment did not cover administrative costs, such as time commanders spent reviewing and approving contracts, the cost of scheduling secondary employment, the time administrative staff spent processing payroll, or the time accounts receivable staff spent billing customers. To ensure that all personnel shortage overtime is accurately documented and to allow supervisors to better manage patrol overtime, the Bureau should provide useful reports about staff overtime to supervisors, limit overtime as other departments have, and improve overtime data collection. To ensure the public benefit of secondary employment outweighs the associated risks, the Bureau should revise and document the contract approval process so that the Chief's Office conducts the primary review of contracts, report publicly on contracts approved, hours worked, and finances, and create rationale for overhead charges that include the cost of payroll processing and billing. And we'll check back in a year to make sure that the Bureau has followed up on our recommendations.
Excuse me.
Commissioner Hardesty.
I would very much like to ask questions on this report because I will be gone when all of the audits have been completed, if that's okay.
Go for it.
First, I want to just thank you. You know, I'm always very, very impressed with the quality of the work that your office does. I've never once seen an audit that wasn't thorough, thoughtful, and I just want you to just first know just how much I appreciate the hard work that goes into audits and how clear your audits are and providing us a good information. Having said that, I am very concerned that as we saw in the chart, that we continue to use the excuse of not having enough officers as the reason for this excessive overtime. And you mentioned in the report about a North Portland, North Precinct, which hires for officers for overtime, sometimes double and triple hiring them when they just need one and they end up with three. And your conversations with the police bureau, did the police bureau offer any advice about how they're gonna make sure that that does not happen in the future?
So that issue happened because of a glitch in the software that the Bureau uses for scheduling shifts for at the precincts.
It took six whole months to figure out that there was a problem. Why do you think it took so long to figure out that two or three people were showing up for one shift?
I think the Bureau doesn't have good reporting, or at least at the time of the audit, it didn't have good reporting to show which shifts were overstaffed. And so we've encouraged them to collect data better and to also produce public regular reports so that more people can keep an eye on these things.
And I just want to say that's normally a recommendation to keep better reporting, but the reporting doesn't seem to get better. So I'm sure we're going to be talking about that as we move forward. I'm also very concerned about fatigue, both for folks who are working excessive overtime within the police bureau doing police work, and then those who are also working outside on other private employment. Do you have any data to show how much of that crossover there is in those two activities for overtime?
I didn't look at separating that out. That data is there, so that's something the police bureau could provide to you.
I think it would be really important to know whether or not we've got people that are working excessive hours for on duty and then working excessive hours for a private company. The 97 hours a week, I just can't imagine anybody working 97 hours a week, right? But that's an outlier, right? That's one person.
Yeah, the ones that stand out for me remembering were mostly ones working shifts, not secondary employment.
And have we addressed the problem of people working overtime to complete reports?
That was another recommendation that we suggested, that the sergeants would keep track of which officers were acting as outliers in using report writing over time, because that could be an opportunity either for training on how to write reports better, or maybe it would be identifying areas of abuse.
And I think the last question that I would have is my concern that there My concern that we may have too lower level of supervision making those decisions. When we have sergeants making decisions about how dollars are spent without supervision from their supervisors, then I think we end up spending money in ways that we are inappropriate and not consistent with the mission of the police bureau. I noticed that you did point out that after we lowered the level of decision-making around how dollars are spent in the various precincts, that it appears that then overtime is out of control in some of those areas because we have a sergeant making decisions rather than someone in a higher-up management position.
And so we recommended that not only does the Bureau create reports on officers and seeing which officers are working excess overtime, but to also look at which sergeants are approving more overtime so that they could also get feedback from their supervisors.
Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I share many of
Commissioner Hardesty's concerns, including issues around secondary employment, which I find problematic in a variety of ways. Yesterday we heard that PPB prioritizes staffing for their core functions. I've heard since I've been here that personnel shortages are keeping them from fully staffing different divisions and that they have to make tough decisions about allocating their resources. I find it really difficult to reconcile those 19,000 hours of secondary employment with that claim. 19,000 hours is roughly equivalent to 9 full-time officers per week. I guess there's not so much of a question in there as just wanting to put a statement on the record about that. And the other very serious concern I have is unlimited overtime. I think we absolutely have to address that. I don't deny the personnel shortages may sometimes necessitate overtime, but we don't want tired officers on duty. We don't want tired people behind the wheels of cars. We don't want tired people making life and death decisions. And if you want to respond to anything I just said, feel free, but I'm I'm sorry, I would be losing Jeopardy right now because I did not phrase those things in the form of a question.
Would you agree
or care to comment on
one of the things about limits is that it's not necessarily going to take away from the Bureau's flexibility to staff when it's understaffed. There's a few people who are really outliers who are working excessive amounts of overtime. Yeah. But what having a limit would do was give everyone a reason to say, no, you need to go home and sleep, and someone else can pick up the slack.
And if I could address something that Commissioner Hardesty said and that you addressed too, is the upshot of this audit is that, and you were speaking to the sergeants, and we already asked sergeants to do a difficult, complicated, dynamic job. And what we want them to have are the best tools available to make really good decisions, to manage their staffs, and to know who might be tired, who they've been tapping too much, or who's been volunteering too much, because I think it's my understanding a lot of the people who are working overtime are volunteering mm-hmm. to work it. And that's really what we think is most important, is that as managers, which sergeants are, that they have the best tools available to them to make good decisions.
And if I remember, a seniority base, right? So you go to the most senior person first and offer them overtime, and then you go down the list from there?
That's right.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. You talked about not keeping public records of contracts that were denied. I was under the impression that any documents were public records documents that could be accessed. And so I'm just wondering why Portland Police got into the habit of keeping some contracts and tossing other ones. I can't toss things out of my office, so I'm just curious as to why they could.
A lot of the reason is that the process for approving contracts has sort of evolved over time. What's happening now is a lot of requests will come in through the police union and then sort of be almost worked out before they even make their way to the commanders and to the chief's office, which is why, and I think the chief agreed with us, that it would be better for it to start funneling in through the chief's office. So some of the...
I thought we had changed that. I'm sorry. Has that changed in the time that you were doing the audit? That process changed?
Not during the time we were doing the audit, but I think that's something that my understanding is that they're considering. But one of the things that happens is a contract sort of get denied in an informal way. So by the time they come into the chief's office, they're already sort of going to be signed anyway. So it's not necessarily that they're throwing out public records, it's more that it's an informal process and they're just not keeping records of what they say no to.
Could I just give an update? The assignment process has been moved back into the chief's office.
Okay. That's,
you can check that box.
Okay, good.
Sorry. That's okay. One last question. You said labor agreement requirements were not being enforced. You found 71 incidents in 2018. When officer or sergeant was compensated with time off for secondary employment. Time off at a future date instead of payment is problematic because when patrol officers take time off, they can be backfilled with someone on overtime. Could you talk a little bit about what part of the labor agreements are not being followed that you highlighted here?
I'm not entirely familiar with it offhand, so I can't reference a number or paragraph, but there is a provision that says that for secondary employment, officers will not be compensated with time off, and they'll have to be paid in cash or with pay time and a half to compensate them. So they're not allowed to bank the time in comp time, which they can do when they're working regular overtime. They can either take time and a half pay on their paycheck or they can sort of bank it to use it a later time. And so we found instances when officers were they were banking their time instead of getting it in their paycheck that week.
So this is a private contract with a private company that is supposed to pay these officers for being employed under that secondary employment contract?
No, actually, the Bureau and the city pay them. So the city does all the billing to the private customers, comes in, and it just gets paid in their paycheck.
But you found 71 incidents, which to me is pretty problematic in 1 year of that not happening the way it's supposed to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just one more question.
Commissioner Daley.
We had a budget note for fiscal year 2017-18 that the Bureau would achieve full cost recovery on secondary employment. I understand the Bureau recommended a $50 an hour increase. The Portland Police Association pushed back and said that was too much, and it wasn't raised the full amount. Do we know how much it was raised and whether or not they've achieved full cost recovery on secondary employment?
I haven't done a follow-up on it yet, so I can't answer that question, but that's something
I'd love to know because, I mean, it's absurd that we would be subsidizing police service for private businesses.
We'll take a look at that when we do the follow-up.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next one is the Portland Building contract.
Good afternoon. My name is Tenzin Gonda, and I serve on the City Auditor's Performance Audit Team. The City Auditor has completed a series of audits during the Portland Building renovation because of the project's high-profile nature, complexity, and cost. Early audits contribute to the accountability and oversight of a construction project. In addition, early recommendations for improvement or correction are less costly than if identified after construction. Our first audit from December 2016 covered the planning phase and ended with the selection of the city's main contractor. Our second audit was published in June 2019 and followed up on the 2016 recommendations that the city should closely manage for the Portland Building renovation to be a success. Today, we are sharing the results from our third audit, which was released in October 2019. The report is titled, Portland Building Contract, Cost Reviewed Were Consistent with Contract, Although Required Cost Classification and Calculations for Final Payment Need to Start Now. This third audit focused on the city's main contractor for the renovation. As shown in this graphic from the Office of Management and Finance, the city, as project owner, chose the delivery method on the left. This means that unlike the traditional approach shown on the right, the city is using one main contractor for the Portland building's design, construction, as well as relocation of city employees. As a result, most of the renovation activity is included in the design, build, and relocation services contract with the city's main contractor. As of March 2019, the contract amount was $157.5 million, and $94 million, or about 60% of the total, have been billed thus far. The Portland building contract includes requirements for how this The contractor will be compensated for costs, submit contract changes, and select subcontractors. These are common focus areas for interim audits of a construction project and a construction contract. The city auditor hired construction audit experts, Schoberg Evanshank Consulting, to evaluate the city's compliance with the Portland building contract requirements. Auditors drew conclusions based on testing from a sample of project costs, change orders, and subcontractors. The audit found many leading practices were employed on the Portland building renovation. Generally, the contractor was following the contract requirements in the three areas audited. Let's now go into detail for each area. Costs billed by the contractor were mostly accurate, supported with detailed monthly expenses, and allowed by the contract. The city's billing review process was thorough and aligned with construction industry practices. Changes to the contract that auditors reviewed were well managed, properly approved, and included costs and activities allowed by contract. The city approved $10 million in changes after setting the contract price in December 2017. Subcontractors were selected by the contractor using sound outreach, advertisement, bidding, and evaluation practices. The contractor shows 140 subcontractors with contracts that total $122 million. In addition to these positive results, the audit identified improvement areas where we make specific recommendations. Let's now go into more detail for each area. The cost classification had not yet been completed by the city or its contractor. This classification is required by contract and is an essential piece of information needed to prepare for the contractor's final payment. Without it, the city may be challenged to comprehensively evaluate the reasonableness of contract costs or contract compliance. In the absence of this information, auditors estimate $77.8 million, or 49% of the contract amount, is tied to actual costs subject to an audit. The other 51% of the contract amount does not require support for actual costs and is not subject to an audit. Calculations for final payment are important because some bills have been based on estimates and may result in cost savings once compared to actuals. One area to scrutinize will be personnel costs because they are the largest and most consistent source of cost savings on construction projects. For example, the city's main contractor has billed some personnel costs based on estimates. It will be critical for the city to compare these estimates to actual costs paid by the contractor. When the contract does not specify when and while the contract does not specify when and how project costs will be reconciled, the city and the main contractor have informally agreed to perform final calculations as part of project closeout. Calculations for final payment will be time-consuming and should begin now rather than waiting until the renovation is complete. Finally, lessons learned from the Portland building renovation should be shared to benefit other city construction projects. Examples of areas for future improvement include clearer contract language about cost documentation and completed project management plans. Moving forward, the city auditor will monitor and report on the city's implementation of these recommendations as part of our office's annual follow-up process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jenny Scott, and I led the audit released last month called The City Needs to Make Realistic Commitments to Voters and Ensure that They Are Delivered. During our audits of programs created by the arts tax, the cannabis tax, the Portland housing bond, and the gas tax, we noticed a trend. Across most of these city-referred measures, the city made commitments about what new resources would be used for, oversight, annual public reports, annual audits, and administrative caps. However, the city's implementation of some of these accountability protections fell short of what was promised. In our audit, we examined the city's implementation of accountability commitments made to voters. This audit was unique because City Council was the auditee. We didn't want to focus only on the bureaus that have been involved with city-referred measures in the past, since future initiatives may involve different bureaus. We found that there was no consistent assessment of the feasibility of commitments made to voters. Although council approved all measures that they placed on the ballot, the council meetings did not include discussions about each accountability measure the city planned to promise, and the fiscal impact statements did not include information about the administrative burdens and costs to implement the accountability commitments. Portland is not alone. Other cities did not have a unique mechanism to help ensure that commitments made to voters were realistic. We found that the city is not always clear when communicating commitments to voters in ballot titles and explanatory statements. The city attorney's office drafts the ballot titles, and the summaries cannot exceed 175 words. On the other hand, the explanatory statements are typically written by the commissioner's office that sponsors the legislation and are often informed by polling. Unclear language and varying levels of detail may confuse voters and can make program implementation challenging for bureaus. Portland's commission form of government can make program implementation more disconnected from commitments made to voters than in other cities. Commitments can fall through the cracks or diverge from what was promised to voters when there are changes in leadership coupled with unclear commitments. There is no central and consistent monitoring once a voter approved city tax or bond is passed to help ensure that accountability measures are established and consistent with what was promised to voters. Oklahoma City and Austin assigned monitoring of voter-approved programs to the city manager's office to help ensure that commitments to voters were delivered.
Are you making a case here for a different form of government?
I am.
I want you to know I support that. Yeah. So, but I just wanted to overtly ask the question. Are you making that case?
Well, we are arguing that it's harder to ensure that the city delivers their commitments because of this commission form of government.
Personally, I agree with you.
Okay. Time wasn't short. We could have a debate, but let's not.
I just had to take the opportunity. You knew I couldn't resist.
I know.
To help ensure that ballot commitments are achieved, we recommend that before preparing language for city-referred ballot measures, City Council should direct bureaus to assess the administrative burdens and costs to implement planned accountability measures to ensure that they are feasible. These assessments should be documented so that the meaning and intent can be referenced when the program is implemented. Make commitments in the ballot title and explanatory statement to voters that are smart, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and when appropriate, time-bound. Specify the position or body responsible for monitoring accountability commitments. Early verification that accountability measures are implemented and regular monitoring to assess that they are operating as intended should be included in these duties. In addition to recommendations for City Council, in our audit, we shared information on ways to approach accountability commitments in future ballot initiatives. These are available in the audit report and in the one-page highlights document. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any additional questions?
I do not. Does that complete your report?
That completes our presentation.
I'll entertain a motion.
I don't think the auditor usually likes us to accept a report.
Oh, would you mind if I made some closing remarks then?
Please.
Very good. So first of all, I want to thank the auditor for the recent reports that we heard about today, the police overtime audit, the Portland Building Reconstruction Contract audit and tax accountability, as well as the other follow-up reports associated with these. Regarding the overtime audit, the audit centered around three key areas. The first was data collection, the second was reporting, and the third area was secondary contracts. On data collection, I would argue that data collection has improved as a result of the audit. And as a result of the audit, Portland Police Bureau has developed a data-informed model to determine minimum staffing levels. Sergeants and command staff now have access to a Tableau dashboard, which has improved overtime reporting and management at the Portland Police Bureau. With regard to reporting, since the audit, the Portland Police Bureau has refined the overtime dashboard to include metrics by division, assignment, type, individual, and approval level overtime data. PPB's next steps include training for all supervisory personnel on the dashboard to improve their understanding of overtime usage. And additionally, the Portland Police Bureau will launch a public-facing dashboard by April 2020. And we look forward to working with you to continue to enhance those opportunities. On secondary employment contracts, actions have been taken to more effectively manage secondary employment contracts. Senior management oversight has increased. PPB's chief's office is now reviewing all contract requests and deciding which contract will be approved and which will be denied. In January, PPA bargaining sessions will begin and secondary employment will likely be discussed as part of bargaining. In summary, the changes in overtime management by PPB have improved clarity and transparency in the management of PPB overtime dollars. I want to be very clear, the work is not done. PPB is continuing efforts to effectively manage overtime dollars to address staffing shortages while providing for the public safety. with regard to the Portland Building reconstruction. The Portland Building reconstruction contract audit confirms that the city has been complying with financial best practices in managing the contract for this project. This has also been noted by the Portland Building Community Oversight Committee, which has consistently praised the project for its transparency and its commitment to financial stewardship. I particularly want to highlight the finding related to the contractor's selection of subcontractors. The Portland Building Reconstruction Team worked collaboratively with the prime contractor, Howard S. Wright, to carry out outreach and procurement methods that helped us to meet our ambitious social equity goals for diverse contractor and workforce participation. We're very proud of the hard work the Portland Building Reconstruction Team did in meeting those goals and responsibly managing this contract. I also agree with the audit's recommendations on areas for improvement, including the need to begin calculations for final payments immediately and to share lessons learned from this process to inform and improve future city projects. And finally, I appreciate the recommendations for improvement in the audit of accountability for voter-approved taxes. The city has, by and large, delivered on the commitment we've made about how voter-approved tax and bond revenues would be used. However, we can do better to make our commitments about accountability measures clearer and more specific to improve their implementation. I look forward to working with my fellow commissioners to take these recommendations into account in future measures that the city may place on the ballot. And I want to thank you all for your hard work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will take about a 7-minute-ish break, and we'll be right back.